My name is Richard Sykes. I'm the chairman of GlaxoSmithKline, which is now the largest pharmaceutical company in the world. And I'm also rector of Imperial College of Science, Technology and Medicine, which is certainly one of the most famous science universities in the world.
My name's Michael Sykes. I'm a dairy farmer from Slathwaite, or Slawit, as it's known locally, in West Yorkshire, and I've lived here all my life.
My name is Stephen Sykes. I'm a professor of theology and also a bishop. I was born in Bristol, and my father was a Yorkshireman. He was very, very much a Yorkshireman, and we all were brought up on the fact that he was from Sheffield and a great supporter of Sheffield Wednesday.
Three very different Mr. Sykeses. Apart from their surname, you wouldn't think they were connected. And yet, as we'll hear, there is a connection that's so strong it's written into every cell of their bodies, and it even stretches to fictional Mr. Sykeses.
I'm Sir John Sykes. In 1837, Dickens was writing Oliver Twist in serialised form. He introduced the character Bill Sykes, and everyone at the time knew that this was a reference to my great-great-grandfather's brother, Sir Francis William Sykes.
In some areas of the country, the name is so unusual, it can cause a few problems.
I'm Richard Sykes from East Preston in West Sussex, and there's only one or two of us in the area, as far as I know, and I have to say that every time I'm asked to give my name to somebody, I have to spell it, because they often get it S-K-Y-E-S. I really don't know why, but it happens so often.
Yet in parts of West Yorkshire, it seems you can hardly move for Sykeses.
I'm Margaret McGee, but I was born as Sykes. And my father, Joe Sykes, married Miriam Sykes. And his mother was a Sykes before she was married. And his grandmother was a Sykes before she was married. And when I did a family tree, I realised that three out of four grandparents were Sykes. And five out of eight great-grandparents were Sykes. So I said, well, I must be the Sykesiest of them all.
All these Sykeses are from different parts of the country, from different walks of life, and as far as they're concerned, they're entirely unrelated. But new techniques in DNA analysis have shown not only that they might be related, but that in all probability they all come from one single ancestor, the one original Mr. Sykes. It's the single most important advance ever in the field of genealogy, opening up exciting avenues of research to genealogists, linguists, historians and demographers. For me, it's particularly exciting, for it confirms scientifically what I first said over 30 years ago about some surnames having single origins. And it all started when Sir Richard's company Glaxo were holding a lecture on genetics, and the speaker was yet another Sykes, Professor of Human Genetics at Oxford University, Brian Sykes.
The people from Glaxo were saying, well, you know, you related to Richard Sykes, and I thought, well, no, not at all, really. And then it suddenly struck me, well, I wonder if I was, not knowingly through genealogy, but if perhaps we were related through our Y chromosomes being passed from father to son.
So I sent Brian a swab from the inside of my cheek and waited anxiously for the result, and nothing came, so I badgered him for the result because I thought maybe I'm illegitimate or something.
I did the test on him and on my own DNA, and sure enough, we have exactly the same Y chromosome fingerprint.
And that was quite a remarkable result.
I was amazed, really, because it means that we are actually connected, even though, I mean, I suppose if we spent hundreds of years going through genealogical records, we might find that connection, but here you could do it in an afternoon, as it were.
So Brian decided to test more Sykeses. He looked at the geographical distribution of nearly 10,000 UK voters with that surname and found strong concentrations in Yorkshire, Lancashire and Cheshire. He wrote to nearly 300 Mr. Sykeses, chosen at random from those three counties, including dairy farmer Michael Sykes from Slathwaite.
This is a letter I got, and it goes, Dear Mr. Sykes, I'm writing as a Sykes myself to ask for your help in a research project into our name. Then it goes on, To help us in this project, all you need to do is collect a few cells from your inner cheek using the small brush. Just rub the brush gently against the inside of your cheek 10 times each side. I was a bit taken aback when I received this letter, but it's a subject that I do think a bit about our family tree, and so I thought, well, yeah, let's go for this and see where the Sykeses all originate from, and we'll give it a go.
Each of us has 23 pairs of chromosomes, sequences of DNA bases, mostly a mixture from the father and mother, but the Y chromosome is just transmitted from father to son as an integral unit, and so remains unchanged throughout generations. But unrelated men have different Y chromosomes, and a major recent breakthrough was the ability to distinguish between them by looking at four so-called markers.
We're looking at small sections of DNA, sometimes very small, maybe only three or four DNA units, or bases as they're called, which are repeated one after the other. So, for example, one Y chromosome might have, at one particular marker, 10 repeats of a little section of DNA, and another one might have 12 repeats or 13 repeats. So that's where you build in the variation. If you then combine one marker with another, say you can have 10 different repeats at one marker and 10 at another marker, that actually gives you a combination of 100 different Y chromosomes. So giving us a fantastic ability to distinguish one Y chromosome from another.
So I got a brush in a sterile pack through the post, so I tore it apart and take it out and pop it in the mouth, 10 times each side, there you go. Then popped it back in the pack, in the envelope, and back it goes to Oxford. What could be simpler? So if they can find out where we come from just from that, that's absolutely amazing.
And then the brush comes out of the packet. We break off the tip and put it into a little test tube. And then we use a range of enzymes and chemicals to purify the DNA away from the other components of the cells, and maybe bits of food as well that have found their way into the packet. The next stage is to target the Y chromosome and amplify those bits that we want to amplify millions of times that define the markers. And that's done in a machine over here, which you can hear whirring away. Basically what this machine does is heats up and cools down the DNA sample, and included in the test tube are DNA copying enzymes. And every time it heats up and cools down, it doubles the amount of DNA in there.
This is the other huge breakthrough. Instead of the doubling taking a few days, it takes just minutes. So you need only a few cheek cells instead of pints of blood. And sampling on a large scale becomes so much easier. Soon 50 samples rattled through the letterbox from the cheeks of random Mr. Sykeses, and all was set to go. But Brian wasn't optimistic.
I didn't actually expect much of it. In fact, to be honest, I got these brushes back and I was doing a lot of other things at the time, and I just put them in the freezer for a few months. It wasn't as if I leapt on it, because I thought it was such an unlikely thing to happen, especially since I'd found out in the meantime that the derivation of Sykes is from a feature of the landscape, a kind of brook, stream. But when I did eventually get round to analysing them, I was astonished that half of the people that I wrote to all had exactly the same Y chromosome fingerprint, and the same one as myself, and the same one as Richard. And that was just amazing, really. I was so surprised, because it meant that the most reasonable explanation, there are others, but the most reasonable one is that it must have meant that there was only one original Mr. Sykes.
I was really taken aback when I found out that we was all related and it all went back. It's quite scary, really, when you think there's so many Sykeses around here and all go back to the one Mr. Sykes. Frightening.
I've always known there's a huge clan of Sykeses, mostly. If you look at the telephone directories of the West Riding, it's perfectly obvious. But that we might be related to each other in a rather closer way is just astonishing.
Well, we all come from Adam and Eve, don't we? But yes, it is interesting that the surname goes so far back. I'd always imagined that anybody who lived by a little Yorkshire stream could have been called Sykes, but I'm really fascinated that we could be descended from one particular family in the Middle Ages.
So, 50% of Sykeses have the same Y chromosome, which incredibly isn't found at all in non-Sykeses, even though several thousand from all over Britain have been tested. So what of the other 50%? Well, as they resembled the rest of the population, Brian Sykes took that to mean they'd been introduced by what are called non-paternity events. That's adoption, or just assuming the name, or through illegitimacy.
You can calculate, if you add all the 50% non-central Y chromosome, how often the combination of these three events must have happened over the 700 or 800 years that we think the name has been around. And it's an astonishingly small proportion. It comes out to 1.3% per generation. So that means that 99% of Mrs. Sykeses over this long period have been very well behaved. The question is, were other surnames as well behaved? And the answer is yes. All the surnames that we've done have all come out to round about that level, between 1% and 2% per generation, non-paternity events. So very, very small. If it had been much higher than that, we never would have seen any sort of pattern in the modern distribution if it had been substantially higher.
So, a single founder. The others accounted for by non-paternity events. But that conclusion isn't shared by some, such as Mark Joblin of the genetics department at the University of Leicester.
There's another explanation, which is that there are actually multiple founders. So one of those founders has prospered. Men during that Sykes lineage have had sons who have had sons. We end up with this 50% Sykes cluster, which stands out. Other men, other lineages may have gone extinct altogether. Others may have drifted to low frequency because of fluctuations in the number of sons during those lineages. And those give us the low frequency lineages now.
And of course, if those have a similar pattern to the general population, they will be indistinguishable from the groups which have been assumed to be non-paternity events, a point conceded by Brian Sykes.
There might still be surviving Sykeses, but what we do know is that they're not actually making up a substantial proportion of the modern Sykeses from wherever they are in Britain. And it's really impossible to distinguish that from a non-paternity event or something like that within the main cluster of Sykeses.
Some have argued that the sample was biased because it came from just Cheshire, Lancashire and Yorkshire, but Syke meaning a stream, which gives rise to the surname, is a northern word. So for me, that argument carries less weight. Mark Joblin, though, has other reservations.
My feeling here is that what we have is essentially a very unusual British Y chromosome in the Sykes. And that is why, with only four markers, it stood out so clearly. So, in a sense, this first study was a lucky study, because if the Sykes chromosome had been a kind of chromosome that was similar to very many in the general population, then it wouldn't have stood out, and perhaps the amount of interest in surname studies and genetics would not have been generated.
Yes, we were fortunate in retrospect, but it's good to be lucky. Nonetheless, I still think that even if the Sykes chromosome had been pretty common in the population, we still would have seen a very convincing pattern. And the reason for this is that the pattern would still show through compared to the controls, because 50% of the Sykes Y chromosomes have exactly the same signature. And nothing in the general population approaches 50% in frequency with those marker systems.
So if there was just one Mr. Sykes, where did he come from? Brian Sykes found a huge concentration in the village of Slathwaite near Huddersfield, so he tested the DNA of Sykes's there. Now using 10 markers, he found no fewer than 70% had this same Y chromosome. The news delighted one native of Slathwaite, Sir Richard Sykes of Glaxo.
That really was dramatic, the 70% in Slathwaite, because nobody could ever have predicted anything like that. It sort of defies definition in a sense. The 50% in itself would have been quite remarkable, but 70 is unbelievable.
And with the extra definition provided by 10 markers, it's now possible to see small mutations. These occur as random events, on average about once every 400 years or so, and their presence reveals some intriguing details.
Here we have somebody who, instead of having 15 repeats at the first marker they used, has actually got 14, so they've lost one. Here's another one, they've increased from 23 at the second marker to 24. So they can go up or they can go down, one at a time usually, sometimes two at a time. So this is very exciting because it means that not only can we make sort of generalisations about surnames and Y chromosomes, it's also, when we look at the fine structure with larger number of markers, we can even begin to distinguish different branches of the family that have come off from the original Mr. Sykes, however many hundreds of years ago that was.
Mark Joblin, though, remains cautious about a single founder.
The finding that with more markers the concordance increases to 70% is very striking, and I think that this may well in this case support at least, if not a single founder, then one founder whose lineage has prospered very dramatically and others which have not. But there again we have also to come back to the observation that the derivation of the Sykes surname is not one which would lend you to immediately suppose that there should be a single founder.
That may be true, but such names can be very distinctive. In his four volumes for the English Surname series, Richard McKinley has offered strong evidence for that, and I've argued the case myself for over 30 years. But I was wary where Sykes was concerned, for I'd found it in the 1300s in a dozen localities within a 40-mile radius. Some of these could be the less prolific lines that Mark Joblin mentioned. In fact, a Syke was a boundary stream, although in the plural it referred to drainage ditches in the medieval open fields, and to the adjoining strips of meadow. Now, the earliest records
come from the village of Flockton, 9 miles to the east of Slathwaite. So I took Brian to a spot on the Flockton boundary, which gave us a view of the crofts and fields where William Dell Sykes farmed in the 1280s. Although we can't be sure of finding the exact site, few drainage ditches last that long, the family in some records were said to be of Emley, the adjoining parish, so I knew we must be close to the spot.
But, I mean, looking around here, we can't see the ruins of the original house.
We can see ruins, but that's the old mill house. There was the corn mill here. This is on the stream that divides the two parishes.
But it could have been right here, couldn't it?
Yes, it could, yes.
But how many Sykeses do you think there were living here?
Oh, I think we're talking about just one family. There may have been a couple of generations, possibly even three, but really in the 1280s, 1290s, just that William Dell Sykes, and then followed by Henry Sykes, John Sykes, and so on, but one family. And, of course, they're still there today. What you mustn't forget is they are. Up there in the village, there are people still called Sykes.
But that's only about 300 yards away.
Well, that was why I was so reluctant to think that they could be connected with the Sykes in Slathwaite, which is 9 miles away across the hill. And that's why we asked you to do some further research, targeting, really, the Sykes in Flockton.
Which we did, and also the Sykes in Slathwaite, and sure enough, they're exactly the same genetically. They have the same Y chromosome. So the Y chromosomes come to this field, up to the village, some of it stayed here, and some of it's gone to Slathwaite.
Exactly. I mean, I dare not assume that in my research that the two were connected at all, following traditional lines. So your research is a real breakthrough. It allows us to connect Sykes in two villages several miles apart.
It is an odd feeling being here to think that, because I have the same Y chromosome as the Slathwaite and Flockton Sykes, and I must be descended from the people that lived in this very spot all those hundreds of years ago. And really looking out and see much as it is today, because Harry hasn't changed all that much. So the children would have been playing in this stream, the birds singing, the trees we can hear now. It's just amazing to think that this is the very spot right here where it all started.
So how could these early Sykeses find their way over the hills to Slathwaite, as Brian's evidence suggests? Well, here the historic records come into their own. It looks as though after the Black Death, a younger branch of the Flockton family took the opportunity of acquiring land in another part of the manor on the remote moors of nearby Austenby. Brian and I actually saw the remains of a house there, where we know a John Sykes was living in 1416. Life could be hard and violent in those days, and John's kinsmen were frequently involved in assaults and bloody affrays. Deer were killed and animals stolen, driven over the hills to Derbyshire, 50 on one occasion. Next, we find William Sykes, living in 1425 in the valley of Wessenden. And from there, you can actually see the next stop, the hamlet of Slathwaite Hall, high above modern Slathwaite. And I took Brian to where a house still stands on the original site of a manor house owned by the Kays, but leased by them to the Sykes family.
So this is actually a house where Sykes has lived, rather than a pile of old rubble or nothing at all, which is all I've seen up to now.
They certainly lived here. One of the problems was that previously our understanding of when they were here was dependent on the court rules. We can pick them up in 1524 as basically the most important family in Slathwaite Hall, but we'd no knowledge of them before that. However, a couple of years or so ago, I managed to trace some of the Kay family deeds. They turned up, believe it or not, in Kansas. I spent a month across there going through something like 700 medieval deeds for the Kays estate. And wonderfully, right in the middle of that collection were two references to Slathwaite Hall in the 1400s, actually saying that the Sykes were the tenants here. The actual deed that I have here says, look, that the tenants of Slathwaite Hall were John Sykes and then another John Sykes, two James Sykes, two Oliver Sykes, and believe it or not, Brian, a Brian Sykes.
A Brian Sykes. No. Really?
Exactly, yes. 1491, Brian Sykes, tenant at Slathwaite Hall.
Wow. So right behind us.
Yes.
Brian Sykes lived here.
In fact, so many Sykeses, they accounted for a third of Slathwaite's population. Now, after the Black Death in 1349, many populations were struggling. So why were families like the Sykeses doing so well in the Colne Valley? Demographer Richard Smith of the University of Cambridge.
We know that Pennine Valleys experienced quite sharp demographic growth. I'd say after about 1550, through into the early 17th century. What was particular about those economies that enabled that kind of demographic growth is more difficult, I think, to say. It may well have been a particular combination of pastoral farming and rural industry.
In other words, a dual economy, where farming families supplemented their income by weaving and selling their own cloth. And according to local historian Cyril Pierce of Breton College, this fledgling textile industry was hungry for workers.
Quite frankly, in the home-based woolen textile manufacturing, there were lots and lots of jobs for different members of the family to do, whether it was carding, combing the wool to make it ready for spinning, whether it's actually spinning it, whether it's winding bobbins, getting them ready to go into the shuttles that go into the loom, or any process you can think of. There's always a job to do for an extra pair of hands.
Another reason why Colne Valley families flourished was that people here became very self-reliant. And we know in later years the textile industry grew to national importance.
The Colne Valley was very much frontier territory, a long way away from the kind of detailed daily control of a lord of the manor. As a consequence, my own feeling is that there were much more informal arrangements made here for fulling mills and for the detailed management of the wool textile industry. And of course, that gave the wool textile industry in this part of the world a very different flavour. So that by the time of the Napoleonic Wars, instead of the British Army and Navy being clothed from East Anglia or from Gloucestershire or Oxfordshire, British Navy's uniforms were all made in West Yorkshire.
Even in the 1500s, the Sykeses were multiplying and making their presence felt, clearing woodland and building houses. In 1524, William and James Sykes were fined 10 shillings at the Manor Court for cutting down 50 mature oaks. And there were soon so many William Sykeses and John Sykeses that individuals were identified by nicknames or by names, a practice still remembered by Margaret McGee.
My father's father was John Allen Sykes, or Jack Allen, I called him. And I'm told that he was known as John o' Tom's, o' John's, o' Kevil's. So Tom was his father, John was his grandfather, and who Kevil was, we don't know, it may even have been a place name.
And while the Sykeses in Slathwaite were flourishing, others were stirring up controversy, and we're back to the Bill Sykes connection. Sir John Sykes's family belonged to the Flockton Sykeses, and it was his great-great-grandfather's brother, Francis William Sykes, who publicly denounced his wife after finding her in bed with the Irish painter Maclise. But he hadn't bargained for the fact that the painter's best friend was a famous novelist.
Charles Dickens felt that his friend Maclise had been exposed in a way which was entirely wrong, and he saw this as a way of getting his own back on behalf of his friend. He avoided libel by changing the spelling of Sykes from S-Y to S-I-K-E-S, and he took his middle name, William, making him Bill Sykes. The interesting thing is that over the years, many members of the family have been called Bill Sykes, although we have never realised, nor has anybody else, as far as I know, what the connection was, until an American art historian who was doing researches into Dickens and his relationship with Maclise asked to see a picture which we own, which was being painted by Maclise in 1837 at the very time this was all happening. And when she saw the picture, she was able to confirm her conclusions that Bill Sykes was indeed derived from the third baronet.
So there we are, the truth about Bill Sykes. But where do we stand on the original Mr. Sykes? Well, there's no doubt that the great majority of people called Sykes can trace their roots back to the Slathwaite family. And Brian Sykes puts forward a strong case for the line going back even further.
I think we are actually seeing the signal of the original Mr. Sykeses, because we're seeing quite a lot of people with slight mutations away from the central Y chromosome. Had it been the result of an expansion 500 years ago, rather than having its deeper roots maybe 700 or 800 years ago, we wouldn't have seen, I don't think, quite so many of these side mutations that have come off.
And that, together with the fact that Flockton and Slathwaite Sykeses share the same Y chromosome, does suggest a single origin for the name in and around Huddersfield. However, other Sykes lines may have survived, but with very few descendants. And it seems to me that as one last check, we need to test the Sykeses in other areas, Wharfdale perhaps, or Cumberland. Only then can we make the remarkable conclusion that all Sykeses share a common ancestry. And who knows, perhaps we shall even find the original Syke. But how will this research impact on other surnames? Again, there's going to be discussion. Mark Joblin.
Well, I think that the Syke study is a very important first study because it sets out the stall of using the Y chromosome in association with surnames. But I think that, in a way, we expect that men who share a surname are more likely than a random group of men to share relatively recent ancestors. And in this study, there is a particularly striking pattern. A name like Smith, which is at about 1.5% in the population, will obviously have had very many founders, and so you'd expect quite a lot of variation among men whose name was Smith, whereas in a name like Sykes, which is not all that common, we certainly expect to see quite a lot of Y chromosome sharing.
People might say, well, you know, we expect people sharing the same surname to have the same Y chromosome. Well, I didn't, especially with a name like Sykes that could have had several origins. But, of course, the Sykeses might have been a one-off, but that's not true. You can see this pattern in many other names. But even more interesting is within some names you can see subtleties that can be pursued by genealogists to try and unravel these slight differences that we see within groups and so on and so forth. So it's not just a question of saying, OK, well, you just take a name, it's got a single origin. There's all sorts of adventures that can be had when we marry up closely the genetics with the genealogy.
And it's those adventures that we'll be having over the next few weeks. DNA studies hold the key to testing genealogical links and can help answer questions about surname variations, even origins and meanings. For me, Brian's work has been a revelation, for it sets the seal on ideas developed during 40 years' research into surnames. And I think this element of working together surname specialists with scientists has us both feeling that we're on the verge of an amazing breakthrough. And there's something exciting here.
It's not just that, you know, I can sort of vaguely prove it or even that it was in the records. There's actually something that I'm carrying within the cells of my own body. It's a very tangible connection that actually makes me think much more about my ancestors as individuals, as people, rather than as some sort of hazy continent, because they've passed this baton, this Y chromosome, down to me.